Welcome to the Personal Brain Trainer Podcast. I'm Dr. Erica Warren.
And I'm Darius Nomdaron, and we're your hosts. Join us on an adventure to translate the scientific jargon and brain research into simple metaphors and stories for everyday life. We explore executive function and learning strategies that help turbocharge the mind.
Come learn how to steer around the invisible barriers so that you can achieve your goals. And this podcast is ideal for parents, educators, and learners of all ages.
This podcast is brought to you by Bulletmap Academy, and we have a free dyslexia screener app called Dyslexia Quiz. It's fun, engaging, and interactive app. Try it now. Just search for Dyslexia Quiz on the App Store and see how your scores differ from your friends and family.
This podcast is brought to you by GoodSensoryLearning.com, where you can find educational and occupational therapy lessons and remedial materials that bring delight to learning. Finally, you can find Dr. Warren's many courses at LearningSpecialistCourses.com. Come check out our newest course on developing executive functions and study strategies.
Hey, Erica, I'm excited about this podcast. What are we talking about today?
We're going to talk about whether you have ADHD and also whether it impacts executive functioning.
I'm excited because when you say whether you have ADHD or not, we're actually going to talk about whether I have ADHD or not and whether you as a listener have ADHD or not. And the reason we brought this one up, Eric and I were talking about it, is that I'm having a little bit of deja vu here because I was identified with dyslexia when I was 35, the second time I went to university. And at that time, I was kind of like, yeah, I might be slightly dyslexic. You know, is it such a big deal? No, not really. Then I go to university, I get identified, and then I realized that the assessor's like, actually, this is getting in the way of your learning, and you need to find strategies to be aware of it. And then I was like, oh, wow, I can learn from the likes of Richard Branson with dyslexia and other different techniques and so on. And it really woke me up to things that were getting in my way that were invisible. And I'm having the same kind of thing going on with ADHD right now because I'm not formally identified with it. But I'm seeing some of the traits. My wife's telling me, I say, I wonder if I've got ADHD. And my wife is like nodding her head very intensively throughout. Maybe my daughter has as well as dyslexia. So first of all, I think we need to clear one big myth up, which sometimes people think if you have dyslexia, you can't have ADHD. And if you have ADHD, you can't have dyslexia, but you can have both at the same time. And that's the biggie. And actually, there's a lot of people with dyslexia who also have ADHD. And I mean a lot. I mean, we're probably talking somewhere between 25 and 40% of people with dyslexia probably have ADHD as well, whether they know it or not. And I might be one of them. I probably am. So let's talk about it, Erica. How do I know if I've got ADHD or not? And what effect does ADHD have on executive functioning skills is also the core question here. If you do I have ADHD? And does it affect and impact executive functions?
Yeah. Why don't we start there? Because I think that's a really interesting question. And I think the important thing to understand is that attention is a piece of executive functioning. And it's funny, I initially thought, well, I guess it resides under inhibitory control because individuals with ADHD have a hard time inhibiting all the things that are going on around them, and their attention tends to switch from topic or subject or environmental thing that's going on around them. So I was like, oh, it's got to be inhibitory control. However, I think we also have an issue going on in many cases with people with ADHD, and I think it does depend on the different individuals, but many of them have a difficult time with cognitive flexibility. So they might hyper-focus on something and have trouble moving from one task to the other.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there are those that have ADHD that have some working memory issues.
Yeah. So this is an interesting aspect to this whole conversation, which is co-occurring issues, co-occurring differences, or co-occurring difficulties. So often, if you have dyslexia, for example, it's primarily around phonological processing and other processing difficulties, numeric processing, etc. But you can also have a smaller working memory, which isn't technically part of dyslexia, but it comes often, most of the time, as part of the package of dyslexia, a difficulty, a smaller working memory. And likewise with ADHD, there are other things that come with the package as well, which aren't necessarily ADHD, but associated. Like, you could have a smaller working memory plus ADHD. ADHD doesn't mean you have a smaller working memory. It's not part of the definition of becoming identified as ADHD, but it can compound your executive function. So it's just interesting to sort of realize that one category doesn't necessarily define a person's thinking approach.
However, you could also think about it this way. If you have a hard time sustaining attention, then you could also have a hard time holding on to that information and manipulating it, which is what working memory is. So They are definitely related, but you're right. They're not mutually exclusive. For sure.
Yeah, I mean, if we go through what we've been talking about, the three main themes in executive function throughout this podcast, we keep touching them, are working memory, inhibitory control, cognitive flexibility. Or in layman's term, working memory, capturing information, inhibitory control, focus, and cognitive flexibility, adapting.
And shifting.
Mm-hmm. Shifting, yeah. So capture, focus, shift are kind of three core functions of executive function. Or actually, I was thinking of them, if I were to categorize them, in three ways. There's what's coming into your mind, which is capturing information, working memory. Then there's the inhibitory control, which is focus, what you do when you're processing information and thinking through stuff. And then there's acting, sort of responding and acting out in the world, which involves cognitive flexibility. It's like how you dialogue with reality and adapting cognitively, flexibly to the reality of what's in the world and the reality of what's within your mind and that cognitive flexibility. So there's really the in stuff coming in, there's how you're processing inwardly, and then how you're adapting to the world outside.
I like that. It's an interesting metaphor, and it reminds me of a camera. However, the thing is, you have to be a little careful because we can't keep them always in those categories, because sometimes working memory is not always the input, but it's also the output, because it's also the processing, because you're having to take the sensory information, you're processing it, and then you're attaching long-term memory. You're also not only encoding, but you're retrieving. So I like that idea. And I think in general, you're right of that kind of input, output, input, process, output. However, they're so interwoven with each other.
Yes.
That's the thing, is they're woven, which leads to another thing that we talked about, which was the higher level executive functioning.
Yeah, so they come mm-hmm. together for the higher level, you know, getting stuff actually done. And yeah, now let's get to the juicy bit, which is, do I have ADHD or not? And how would I, as a complete newbie, there might be people out there going, I wonder if I've got ADHD, and I wonder if I've got ADD, and what's the difference, and so forth. But let's just get stuck into the difference between how you'd find it out in the UK and how you'd find out in the US and anywhere else, really. But you're in the UK, I'm in the UK, you're in the US.
So the interesting thing, you said something very interesting, which is ADHD or ADD. And it's funny because we used to have that designation in the United States, and then they changed it. And they said, everybody has ADHD, but it's minus the H if you don't have the hyperactivity, which I think is strange. And so I'm still more comfortable using the old designation, which you still use in the UK, which is ADD or ADHD, meaning attention deficit disorder and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And there's a distinction because there are two types. There are those that are just inattentive, but you can't really see it. It's invisible. So it's that kind of an internal inattentiveness. They might give you every external indication that they're paying attention, but they're not. And then there are those that have the hyperactivity, and anybody can diagnose them because they're bouncing off the wall and they're showing you that they're inattentive. They're not looking at you. They're blurting out answers. It's so obvious. And they tend to be very disruptive in a classroom.
So give us a checklist of things to look out for inattentive dyslexia, ADHD.
So I think the inattentive piece, as we were saying, has a lot to do with that difficulty concentrating and focusing, but again, it's invisible. So, you know, it's really interesting. What I did is I took the NHS UK definition and I put it right next to the DSM-5, which is the Diagnostic Statistical Manual that we use in the US, so that we could see how they're similar and how they're different. Fantastic. In fact, they're very, very similar. So they both agree that there's an issue with a short attention span. One says short attention span, the other one says difficulty sustaining attention. So they're very, very similar.
What's the short attention span? Is that the UK?
The short attention span is the UK. They can't see, but for us, it's the black one, the American red one.
Yeah, got you. So short attention span, UK, difficulty sustaining attention, US.
Right.
And then easily distracted, UK, and then easily distracted, including unrelated thoughts for the US.
That's right. That's right. And then they both agree that there are careless mistakes, which is so interesting because that's one of my pet peeves. I don't like that phrase. I understand what it means, but it has a really ugly connotation to it because careless, if you take it literally, means that they don't care and these people do care. So I wish, you know, it's interesting. In the United States, they say makes careless mistakes slash lacks attention to detail. Can we just call it lacks attention to detail? Because that careless piece really, it feels like a judgment to me.
Okay.
And I think a lot of people take it as a judgment.
Actually, my attention is wavering right now. Can I make a suggestion? Can we just rattle through the UK version and then the US version so listeners can get the big picture? Can sure. I just do that, please? So UK version, short attention span, easily distracted, careless mistakes, forgetful, loses things, difficulty staying on task, difficulty listening to and carrying out instructions, problems organizing tasks and managing time. I think I just got 10 out of 10 for that. Then the American version is difficulty sustaining attention, easily distracted, including unrelated thoughts, makes careless mistakes slash lacks attention to detail, and fails to follow through on tasks and instructions. Is forgetful in daily activities, avoids or dislikes tasks requiring sustained mental effort, does not seem to listen when spoken to directly, exhibits poor organization, and loses things necessary for tasks and activities. Wow, what a list.
What a list, right? They're very, very similar. I think the one thing that's different between these two, and again, this is only with the inattentive type, is the loses things necessary for tasks and activities. It's an addition to the American definition.
Well, when I was young, oh gosh, I was so bad at losing things all the time. Keys, toys, favorite cars. I just got a train down to London and I put my special coffee mug down while I was waiting. And I was like, right, I need to remember to pick that up. And then I went straight, someone distracted me, was talking to me, and I had to go straight for the train because they were kind of holding me back. And I left it, and I left my precious coffee mug. I hardly ever lose things because I've created a rule now. Whenever I'm traveling, because I hitchhiked to Istanbul, and then I traveled all around Turkey and Israel and so forth, my rule was you only ever have one thing in your hand, two things max. So you've got two hands, so you only have two things. If I have more than two things, like three things to carry, I will lose one of them because I've got two hands for two things. And that was my rule, two hands for two things max. And so if I have my third cup or whatever, I'm going to lose it.
So let's go ahead and move on to the symptoms of ADHD, or basically ADD with the hyperactivity. So
can I clarify? You're going to do another list here. Do you have to have all the previous list plus this to have the hyperactivity on top, or is it one or the other?
I think you can have both.
Okay.
I think you can have both, but I think that they tend to be, you can be one or the other, or you can be both.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Well, let me think about this. I suppose so. I suppose you could be both. I mean, I think you tend to be diagnosed as one or the other, but technically you could have both. I think that you could at times be hyperactive and other times be inattentive.
Okay, so the hyperactive list, why don't you read that out this time, the UK version, and then do the US one?
Okay, happy to. Problems sitting still, constant fidgeting and excess physical movement.
Yeah.
Excessive talking.
Yeah.
Difficulty waiting turn.
Most certainly.
Acting without thinking and interrupting conversations. So you can see that they're really quite distinct, the two lists.
They are.
They're quite distinct. Now, that was the UK version. And let me go ahead and give you the US version.
Mm.
Leaves seat in situations when remaining seated is expected. Fidgets with or taps hands or feet and squirms in the seat. Talks excessively. Has difficulty waiting their turn. Blurts out answers. Interrupts or intrudes on others. These are unique. They are not similar to the UK. And well, they're additions to, shall we say. Experiences feelings of restlessness, has difficulty engaging in quiet, leisurely activities, is on the go, or acts as if driven by a motor. Interesting, right? But understand, they don't have to have every single one of those criteria.
What if you do have every single one of both of those lists?
Then I would say you definitely have ADHD.
I have every single one of all of those lists. Let's go through that list again, and I'm just going to do it for myself. And listeners, why don't you do it for yourself? I'm going to do the US version, which seems to be a bit more thorough. Let's go through the US version right from the beginning, please.
All right, so let's see. Difficulty sustaining attention.
Well, actually, when I think of it, is it kind of age dependent? Do you get better as you get older? I've got better as I've got older, I would say. I can sustain my attention.
It's because you're using strategies. And right. Yes, as you get older, it's quite likely. I think some people might get a little bit better. Some people might get a little bit worse. It depends on so many things. For me, as a child, I had really, really bad ADHD, but it turned out that I was allergic to preservatives. And once I got off of preservatives, it went away.
Wow.
So, you know, it can be diet related. It can be environmental. If you have an intolerance to something and you have an allergen traveling through your system, allergens go through the bloodstream and can affect your attention.
Wow.
So,
okay.
You know, there are many, many different root causes. So if the root cause is environmental or diet related, then yeah, I mean, you might not have had it when you were little and you could have it now, or vice versa.
Oh, I think I had it when I was little. You know, when people talk about, well, when I was young, I used to bite people on the leg.
That's interesting.
I was so hard to control for my mum. I used to run around like this devil, you know, and I was so high energy, so hard to control. And I didn't do it all the time, but my mum used to say, you used to sometimes bite people on the legs when you were really young. And you were so, I found it so hard to take you out because you were just, you know, so.
So what was that all about? Do you have any recollection of biting people?
Oh, I was like, I think I was like 3 years old or 4 years old or something.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, I wasn't like an 8 year old biting people on the leg or whatever. I was like a little kid and just totally.
What do you think the energy behind that was?
I don't know. I probably did it once and it became a myth. It's probably right? Like that. I'll speak to my mum and find out, but. Yes. So easily distracted, including unrelated thoughts.
Is that one for you?
Yes. Yes. Easily distracted.
Okay. Next one. Makes careless mistakes, lacks attention to detail.
Mea culpa.
Another one. Fails to follow through on tasks or instructions.
Well, mea culpa, by the way, means I am guilty in Latin. Fails to follow through on tasks and instructions. A lot of the time, yes.
And are you forgetful in daily activities?
Yes.
And do you avoid or dislike tasks that require sustained effort?
Often, yes.
Does not seem to listen when spoken to directly. Probably when you were little.
Yes. And still now, you know, like with my wife, for example, often I need to be doing something while she's talking or doing, and like I maybe listening, like we'll have be having a conversation in the room and I go, just carry on talking, Joe. I'm going out the room to get something. I'm going to go and do this. I'm still listening. And then I come back in the room, carry on the conversation. I know it's a bit strange, but it's just normal in our life now that, you know, it's like, just keep talking. I'm still here. I'm still listening, but I'm maybe not looking at you. I'm maybe not even in the same room.
You know, I'm jealous because my boyfriend has a hearing impairment and I'll often do that. Uh-huh. And I forget that if I'm not right in front of him and he's looking at me, sometimes he just doesn't even hear me. So I'm jealous of I don't have that luxury with him. But okay.
Exhibits poor organization.
Yes. Is that one for you?
Yes. You know, do you know what?
Well, you're hyper organized because it's hard.
Yes. Well, I'm not hyper-organized. I'm semi-organized. But, you know, like I would be a homeless bum right now if it wasn't for my wife. Very intelligent, very capable, but homeless bum. You know, I'd probably be living in a caravan, coding on a computer with a whole pile of messy stuff in the sink and same clothes and so on. You know, it's like, because if it wasn't for my wife filling in the tax returns and the paying the bills and doing all the paperwork and paying whatever speeding fines we've got and whatever else that's happened, if I didn't have someone doing the paperwork, you know, get to the point where there'd be a red letter, someone would cut the electricity bill, foreclose on the house or whatever, you know, because I hadn't done the paperwork. Now that's partly to do with the dyslexia because I just hate paperwork, and could be ADHD because I just exhibit poor organization. And here's one of my things that's going on in my mind at the moment, by the way. Dyslexia, ADHD. I know we've talked about that in a previous podcast, but I have a theory that some of the traits of dyslexia and some of the traits associated with ADHD are the same, but for different reasons. So, for example, exhibits poor organization is often common with dyslexia because of the processing difficulties rather than the attention difficulties, whereas with ADHD, exhibits poor organization is not because of the processing difficulties, but because of the attention aspects, because organization involves attention and processes.
And it's really interesting because I have dyslexia, but I'm really good with organization. So it just goes to show you that every individual is so unique, and we have to be so careful not to make generalizations. So if that somebody does have a diagnosis, we can't assume that they're like other people with the same diagnosis.
I know, and that's a hard one. I hear that said a lot, and it's true and it's untrue. Okay, there are a lot of common themes, and as a result of them, we can learn a lot because we've got a lot of common, lot of things in common that have common solutions that can commonly help. So yes. It's not a case of, oh, well, everyone's different. You just have to figure out your own thing. No, there are common solutions to the common problems people with dyslexia have and the people with ADHD have. So I'm a little bit wary of everyone's different sort of thing. There's a reason why we identify these things, because there's a common solutions to some of these things. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
But then there are significant differences as well. And that's where nuance needs to be found. You can't go too far one way and too far the other. You have to find that middle ground and decide what are the common things that we can do in common and what are the unique aspects.
Right. And then sometimes you have to tweak the program, but it's really more of just a tweak.
Yes. And I think that's a lot that I've learned from you, Erica, is that, you know, this journey over the last couple of years, being friends with you, talking with you nearly every week, and just discussing these sorts of things as professionals with one another, as a sort of support group to one another, which has turned into this podcast. And it's the only reason I do this podcast, is so I can get to speak to you each week. Is, first of all, I realized I'm all about executive function within Bullet Map Academy, and all the Bullet Map process I developed for dyslexia isn't actually for dyslexia. It's for executive function. And then this whole realization of ADHD, and it's like you said to me a year and a half ago, maybe you're just ADHD, Darius, you know? And I'm like, yeah, maybe I am. But I'm also in that place where I feel a little bit neglectful here of myself, actually. That if I know that I might have a bit of ADHD, I also know better now, working in this field, that having a bit of dyslexia or having a bit of ADHD, if you're saying it like that, you're probably saying, oh, well, it's not such a big deal. It's just a little bit. It's not a big deal. But when you look back over 50 years of life, or over the last year or 10 years, and you ask yourself, how often have you been distracted from what you really want? How often has dyslexia undermined you in ways that you didn't notice? And how much are you paying the consequence of not paying attention to these invisible tripwires in your mind? And I realize, gosh, I am paying the price. I'm seeing others the same age, stage, going ahead of me in certain areas. And I'm like, why is that? And I realize, gosh, it's because I keep not learning certain lessons. And I'm often not learning those lessons, not that it's because of lack of effort, it's because I'm not noticing particular traits to do with dyslexia and probably also to do with ADHD and addressing them, and I'm paying the price.
What I see in you is you're really, really good at pulling people around you that have strengths that balance you out. Because I think, you know, you have so many people that help you in different areas with your different businesses, and you're so good at organizing those people and delegating different tasks to them. And you're really, really good at collaborating with people, and you're really kind, and you create this beautiful community around yourself, which I'm really jealous of because I work solo most of the time. And it's harder for me to collaborate with people, and it's harder for me to delegate. And I've learned a lot from you in that way, that you don't have to do everything yourself. And sometimes it's better to delegate to somebody else that has perhaps a strength that you don't have. And then you can work really well together.
Oh, I wish that was true. I'd like to be like that. And I think I am more like that, but I'm not delegating enough. I'm not learned to trust enough in certain ways and certain times. I would like to be like that person you just described, and maybe I am a bit, but I definitely need to be more like that. And that was one of my, I think 15 years ago, when I switched on to, oh my goodness, I'm dyslexic, because I had a formal identification, this question rose in my mind, which was, I wonder what I could learn from other people with dyslexia. And so when I went off and my first person was Richard Branson. And Richard Branson, his two bits of advice were, one, take notes of everything, because he has a notebook with him all the time and he takes notes of absolutely everything because he knows he'll forget things because of his dyslexia and his absent-mindedness that is to do with processing differences, difficulties. And secondly, delegate. And I realized that I was getting stuck in this prison of I have to do everything well myself, which I think you pick up at school. And I think if you've got a learning difficulty, a learning difference, you pick it up even worse at school if you're not lucky. I really think that sometimes it's like, you know, you need to be good at everything. You know, you need to be good at biology, chemistry, maths. You need to get an A in everything, English. You need to be good at sports. You need to be good at whatever. You know, you need to be good at everything. It's expected that you should have a decent standard of everything, except there are certain people who have highly specialized minds that are terrible at 10 things at school, but really good at two things outside of school. And those two things might be their whole career, like Jackie Stewart, a famous Formula One racing driver of my age, who's dyslexic, Scottish Formula One world champion, really good at driving, really good at business, terrible at school, and couldn't read.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think we are trying to make people super well-rounded, when in fact, when we do that, we're not enabling them to really realize their gifts. So, you know, when I work with students, I often tell families that it's just as important for me to strengthen the strengths as it is to remediate the weaknesses.
Yes. And a big thing that I like to do with Bullet Map Academy and the Bullet Map process is to use your strengths to address the weaknesses. So if you have, and we've talked about that in this podcast a lot, like just taking working memory as an example, you've got the phonological loop, and then you've got the visual spatial loop, or visual spatial sketch back in the sketch pad, and mm-hmm. the phonological sketch pad, and they're two separate channels, but they both can overlap and connect and create dual coding. So if you hear a word, you can then have a picture of the word, and they reinforce and dual code and connect with one another, and it reinforces that. And if you have a strength in the visual and a weakness in the phonological, then you can use the visual to strengthen the phonological, etc. You know, I think that's just one example of it.
Right. You know, and I want to say to anybody that's listening to this podcast, please note that when you go and you get a formal assessment, it's not a quantitative assessment. It's really a qualitative assessment. So if you hear these symptoms, you hear the list that we've gone through, and you're just checking them off, and you're checking off at least five of them, then you can almost self-diagnose yourself, because that's basically what they're doing in these assessments, is they're giving you just a checklist, and you're checking off things, and other people that know you well, perhaps if you're younger, a teacher or a parent. But it's really just a checklist. And then all of those boil down to whether you are checking off enough symptoms to be warranted a diagnosis. So I think it's really nice to know that if you're really listening to this and you are checking off in either one of those categories, at least five symptoms, then yeah, you probably have ADHD.
Wow. So can you go, I know you've done a little bit of work here as well, and you're an educational, you do these assessments too. Behind the scenes, what's the American rules? You've got some of the criterion rules given to professionals when they're making an ADHD identification. Give us a breakdown of that.
Well, there are specific tests that you can take, and they are checklist kind of based. But typically, they need to have, as an adult, if you want to be diagnosed as an adult with ADHD, since I think a lot of the individuals that are listening to the podcast are adults, so I'm going to focus on that for a moment, you have to have five or more symptoms of inattention and or five or more symptoms of hyperactivity impulsivity, and they have to persist for at least 6 months. And that's one key feature. Another key feature is that you have to have several symptoms and that they had to be present before the age of 12 years old. Now, you can also have a late onset, as we were talking about, perhaps due to
allergy
or food or environmental.
Yeah.
And you also have to have several symptoms that must be present and that impact things like home, school, your work, your relationships, and in other activities. And then there has to be some clear evidence that the symptoms interfere with or reduce the quality of your social interactions or your academics or even your occupational functioning. So that's a big deal for adults, that has to have some kind of impact on your work. And symptoms do not occur excessively during the course of things like schizophrenia or other psychotic disorders. So some other disorders, mood disorders, anxiety disorders can look a little bit like that, but you have to rule out that it's not that.
Okay, you said excessively, but you meant exclusively. So symptoms do not occur exclusively during the course of other disorders.
Thank you for correcting that. Yep.
And are not better explained by another mental disorder, mood disorder, anxiety, dissociative personality, substance. Okay. Yeah. So a lot of these traits can happen if you're maybe coming off drugs or you're really anxious about things and so forth. Do you know what? That anxiety thing's an interesting one because I see this with dyslexia a lot. There's a catch-22. You can have dyslexia and then it creates anxiety. And then a lot of the traits are associated to anxiety and not dyslexia or ADHD. And you're like, am I looking here at just the fruit of anxiety, or is there a deeper root that is dyslexia or ADHD? And often it is caused by a root that is causing the anxiety that then shows up those traits.
You know, it's interesting because anxiety, if anybody with a learning difficulty of any kind has anxiety, it feeds the learning difficulty, which feeds the anxiety, and they can get into this really vicious cycle.
Yes.
A little bit of anxiety is motivating, but too much anxiety blocks learning, blocks memory in particular. So when these kids get in a testing situation, which really tends to trigger their anxiety, and if it over-triggers the anxiety, then they really can't access the information that they already know.
Okay, so I'm going to pivot up a little bit here and just I'm asking, you know, what do I do next? I follow a guy called Dan Sullivan. I really like him, who runs Strategic Coach, which is a coaching program for entrepreneurs. And he's ADHD. And I hear him occasionally mentioning it in his podcast. Also, very occasionally, hear him mention remembering to take his pills. And so I don't know if Dan Sullivan is taking ADHD meds or not. But, you know, you don't get medicine for dyslexia, but you do get medicine for ADHD. And does it work, is my question.
I think it works absolutely brilliantly for some people. And for other people, it doesn't work so well. Some people have side effects that are really unpleasant. There are different types of medications. There's some that are stimulants. There are others that actually change the chemical makeup of the brain. So what's important is that you work with somebody that really understands your particular situation. You want to rule out things like food, environmental toxins, because sometimes it's as simple as it was for me is just getting off of preservatives. And then even later on in life, when I gave up starch and sugar and any kind of processed food, my cognition then took another leap forward. So having, for me, having an organic, hyper clean diet has been extraordinarily helpful for my cognition. So you can deal with it naturally. A lot of people don't want to. They would rather just take a pill. But again, it's very much of an individual approach, and everybody has to really explore that for themselves.
Okay, so let's talk about the difference between UK and the USA right now, okay? So I've been doing a little bit of research via my daughter, okay? My daughter is wondering whether she's ADHD as well as dyslexic. And I think she is. I think I am. And so in the UK, it's your general GP, general practitioner, who identifies ADHD and then starts to give you particular drugs. But my understanding is that it's quite a long, convoluted process to go through the general practice process in the NHS. And so what I've heard is, and I don't know if this is true or not, so listeners, if you know better, email us and tell me, but, and this is not official, you know, this is me as a punter exploring it for myself. But what some people do is they go to a private GP who identifies it as ADHD and then starts giving you drugs to and finds the right levels for it if it works. And then if the GP finds the right level, then what they do is they refer you to your normal NHS GP and says, this is the drug level we've identified and I've identified as ADHD, and they're responding to this particular level of drug. Can they continue on in your care? And then the NHS doctor just takes it on and continues to prescribe those drugs and keeps you on that level. So it's a shortcut to just getting stuff done. And I'm thinking about going down that route myself. What's your take on that, Erica? Obviously, you don't know the UK scenario. Maybe you can talk a bit about the American scenario with, because in the UK, we don't have insurance providers in the same way as you do in the US. We just go to the National Health Service and we get free healthcare at the point of need, although there's often quite a few waiting lists. USA is different. What's the situation in the USA in getting some treatment?
You know, I think that it's similar in the sense that there are many options. You can follow the whole path of having a full comprehensive neuropsychological assessment, which warrants a diagnosis, then you would go to probably a psychiatrist that would give you the appropriate drugs. And you always start on a very low level until you work your way up to a therapeutic level. You may have to try numerous different drugs depending on the individual and, you know, because of certain side effects or how it makes you feel or how it impacts your appetite, for example. But I think there are other people that go directly to a pediatrician. Some pediatricians will offer medications. And then there are other types of MDs, that medical doctors that you can work with. So there is kind of a wide range of individuals that you can go to. And even those doctors might give you some of these assessments, which, are, as I said, tend to be more qualitative in the sense that they're checklists. And if there's enough symptomology, or they'll interview you and decide whether, you know, they're willing to try you down a path of medications. And then there's some people that I absolutely love that really look at the individual. They do all sorts of other genetic testing to see if medications are appropriate. They try different supplementation, such as fish oils and other types of supplements that have research behind them that can help with attention. So yeah, there are many different pathways. I usually suggest to all of my families to try the natural things first, largely because I had such success with that. However, a lot of people like to go right to the medication. And for some, I've seen it to be a complete and total game changer, like where it took a child or an even adult that was barely functioning. And then all of a sudden they were doing incredibly well. They were having an enormous amount of success, but it's a huge continuum, and it's just it's a personal exploration.
Yes. Yeah, this is a great conversation, Erica. And I think we need to carry on having some more conversations about ADHD in further podcasts, shall we?
Yeah, perhaps. Perhaps, yeah. We'll see what comes up.
Yeah, absolutely. I think going to an ADHD charity, an organization in your locality would be a good idea. I mean, I may be stating the obvious, but especially with dyslexia or ADHD, it's always useful to go to an international body for it and hear what the sort of straightforward mainline advice is on that as a good starting point, which is exactly what we've done here by going to the NHS guidelines and the DSM-5 diagnostic criteria for ADHD. So, you know, starting off with that and then working out is a helpful next step.
And one really good organization in the United States that people can check out is CHAD. It's, I don't know what the acronym stands for, but it's CHADD. And that's a really great organization to get started with if you want to find some more information about ADHD.
Erica, it's been fantastic. I think that my takeaway, and I hope your takeaway as listeners, is that you can have both dyslexia and ADHD. And I have to say, I think I've attributed a number of traits to dyslexia when actually it's been ADHD. And again, like I've said before, you can have similar traits, but they're occurring for different reasons.
Right.
Like attention. You can be inattentive at school, not because you've got ADHD, but because you can't see the board and read the board. And so you need to go and get glasses and immediately you become attentive. Now, that's an absurdly simple example, but it's a real one. And likewise with dyslexia, you could be inattentive because you can't physically read what's on the board because it's all jumbling up, or you're getting confused with your working memory, reading a word on the board and then writing it down and it's super slow. And then it seems like you're not being attentive, etc., or you're overwhelmed by it. So you can have similar traits that are caused by different roots.
That's right. And also remember that, you know, ADHD can be viewed under the umbrella of executive functioning, or if you think of it like a Venn diagram,
yes,
they overlap a lot. But I do have students that have both ADHD and significant executive functioning problems. Or yes, would even be considered to have an executive functioning disorder.
Yes, and that's an interesting distinction. And I think some people might be wondering, often when people talk about ADHD, they immediately go to executive function issues. And I think the reason is executive function helps everything. You know, it's like if you have strategies to help improve your working memory, any individual improving their working memory strategies will find their whole executive functioning process goes up a level. And executive functioning is core in our busy lives because it helps you get new stuff done. If you've got just normal habits and you're an autopilot and you never need to do new stuff, then executive function isn't that important. You don't need to take in that much important information. You don't need to maintain your focus on different new things. You don't need to adjust your cognitive flexibility because you've just got your thing and you do that and that's it. But life's not like that anymore, especially in our modern age. And so everybody gets benefits from dealing with executive function.
And oh, absolutely.
Including ADHD, dyslexia, and someone with executive function difficulties, and any other typical person. So executive function is often that go-to place where you get a lot of bang for your buck.
Right, because it helps you to process, to make sense, and ultimately when you get to the higher level executive functioning, doing these higher level processes like reasoning, which is really, you know, reasoning and problem solving and everything else.
I want to share one last thing here to do with the UK. If you're in the UK, there's a grant that people with ADHD can get if they're in the workplace. And it's called the Access to Work Grant, okay? And the Access to Work grant is a government grant. It's £145 million a year that's given out to people who are in the workplace who have workplace disabilities. And ADHD traits and dyslexia traits are classed under this. And so what they will do is they will give you a grant of somewhere between £1,000 and £3,000 a year to get training on workplace strategy coaching. They'll also give you apps that help with ADHD and organization and focus. And they'll also give you specialized training on how to use those apps. So it's really easy to get. You just call them up. And actually, I run a company called Dyslexia at Work, and it works for ADHD as well. Maybe I'm going to need to change it to Dyslexia and ADHD at Work. But Dyslexia at Work, where we help people stay organized with an iPad. And if you're interested in applying for this, just call me up or send me an email. And what I'll do is I'll call you and we'll spend 20 minutes filling in the online form so that you've got it in and you can get a response within, normally within about 3 to 4 weeks. But within 6 weeks, you get told whether you've got a grant of somewhere between £1,000 and £3,000. And if you've got ADHD, even if you're not formally identified, but just showing the traits, or dyslexia, or just showing the traits, they will give you this training because they realize how important it is to have strategies in place. And it means that you'll make more money, pay more taxes, or not become unemployed and claim benefits. That's why they do it. They've done the maths. So if you're interested in that, I'll put the link in the description below. You don't have to go through me. Just go and check out Access to Work. It is such a valuable, unused tool. And unfortunately, there isn't such a thing in America yet, is there?
No, but Darius, now what if there was an American, they're listening to this and they're like, wow, well, can I at least get trained with Darius?
Yes, you can. And yeah, we've got people in America who phone me up and say, yeah, Darius, I will pay you directly. And, you know, instead of being paid via a grant, they pay me directly. Yes. And we've got, it's just brilliant. What we've got here, to be honest, it's just the iPad is so useful a tool for people with different learning styles and cognitive processing abilities and ADHD and dyslexia, because you've got that combination of keyboard, pen, touch, all in one place, and you can create an organization system that isn't like what they do on YouTube, where it's all Notion and all words and all tons of complicated lists and so on, and do it more visually, more intuitively. That's what we're all about. So yeah, if you want to get in touch with me and pay me direct, no problem. We've got loads of people who do that too.
Awesome. This was really, really great. And I'm so glad that you shared all that information with the audience. It's your project is very, very exciting. And you're also creating an app, aren't you?
Oh yeah, I'm very, very excited. Actually, I spoke to an app developer yesterday. This is not public yet, but I spoke to an app developer yesterday who is really, really good app developer. And I spoke to him 2 years ago and he says, yeah, I really like it, but no, I'm too busy. I'm not going to do it. But I spoke to him yesterday and he was like, actually, Darius, I'm really interested in this app. I'm really interested. So I'm hoping on Friday he can become part of Dyslexia at Work and start developing this iPad app, because he's already created a different iPad app that's very good. And this one, he's got all the experience to do it. So I'm very excited too. Because what happens is, in the world of dyslexia and ADHD, there's all these assistive technologies. But what drives me nuts is they don't play well with one another. You've got like a voice to text program where you dictate things, and then you've got a text to voice program that reads things out to you, and then you've got a mind mapping program, but that doesn't read things out to you, but you see it all visually. And then you've got like a planner over here, whether it's a paper one or a digital planner, and they just don't communicate with one another. And you're like, oh, these are all great tools for dyslexia. And you're like, that's really great, but I've got processing difficulties. You know, immediately you've created these, they don't talk to each other. So I need to create manual processes between them. And I drop the ball. And so a lot of people just give up on these good ideas, which on their own are great. But when you put them together, they just fall to bits because you just need some proper connected thinking. So long and the short is I want to create an app that has, I can talk out my thoughts and it turns it into text. I can turn that text into maps. I can have a handwriting note and typewritten notes all in the one place. And then I can turn my notes into a task manager that puts it into my calendar. And then once it's in my calendar, will verbally tell me, what do I have to do next? And so right all the way through, I want an app that just does all of that. And that's what we're going to do. I'm fed up waiting for someone else to do it.
And I'm excited because I'm very interested in getting involved in the design of this app too, because I have just so many students that same thing. They're trying to juggle too many apps. They like features of this app. They like features of this app and features of this app. And I want to help you to combine them all so that it can not only be supportive of those that are working, but students as well, perhaps in higher education, even in high school, so that they can just keep themselves organized. So it's a very exciting project. And I'm sure you guys will hear more about it in the podcast.
Yeah, well, it might be that the news of it just trickles out week by week, month by month, year by year, because it's time that apps were created for dyslexia and or ADHD first, rather than it being a byproduct. Oh, instead of saying, oh, this is quite good for dyslexia, it's like, no, this is designed for dyslexia. We've put the right button front and center for you to press straight away, rather than three clicks down on a hierarchy menu where you get lost and you forget where it is and all that kind of assistive technology and so on. Instead of having assistive technology second or third, it's right at the beginning. It's like, where is the dictate button? Let me just make it red so I can just press it.
Yeah, very exciting. Well, thank you so much, Darius. This was a wonderful discussion. We went all over the place, but it was all such valuable information.
Yeah, I'm loving this, Erica. Thanks for spending the time each week and us chatting. And it's great that people are listening in on our conversations each week. It's fantastic to see how many of you starting to listen in. So please connect with us somehow. We haven't figured out how you can connect with us, but emails or messages or whatever, we've got to figure that out, Erica.
Well, we both have our own websites and you can find both of us. You just type in our names. We're all over the internet.
Yeah, so that's right.
Go search. We're on YouTube. We're on websites. So
Facebook, Messenger,
and we have all sorts of links too in the show notes where you can find us as well.
We'll put some links in the show notes to our websites where there's a contact us page, you know.
Sounds good.
Erica, until next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining our conversation here at the Personal Brain Trainer Podcast. This is Dr. Erica Warren.
And this is Darius Nomdaron. You can check out our show notes for links to resources mentioned in the podcast. And please leave us a review and share us on social media. Just take a screenshot and post it up on your social. And until next time, see ya.